Mr. Burgundy, you have a massive erection.
You can throw out all those great backs and great quarterbacks and great defensive players throughout the country and in this conference. But there's going to be one team that's going to play solely as a team. No man is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. You raise me
up. This is Michigan, for God's sakes.
This is The Sophisticated Boner, a Michigan Man podcast for your listening pleasure.
Welcome to tonight's edition of The Sophisticated Boner. I am your host, Mark the Nomad, and tonight I am flying solo because Joshua Henschke decided to cop out. He backed down because he knew we were going to have a New Zealander on the show tonight, and clearly the Australians are an inferior race. So we have a guest joining us tonight. We are joined by Mike Wilson. You can follow him on Twitter, Mike W. Scout. He writes for Scout Magazine, go figure. Used to write for The Only Colors, and he's a huge Sparty. We won't hold that against him too much. He was gracious enough to come on. Mike, how you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing well, and yeah, I'm a little bit bummed that Josh isn't here. I guess you could say that Australia is the little brother to New Zealand.
It is. That's a nice low blow. It is definitely, if people were like, you know, where are you going to go on vacation? Are you going to go to Australia? Are you going to go to New Zealand? I think I'm going to go to New Zealand first. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, you can't go wrong with either. I was in both during February, and I cannot complain either way. Both have their merits, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, New Zealand, you can actually go inland without being killed by some random species, right?
That's absolutely true. Pretty much the only species there is the kiwi bird, which is a wimpy little flightless bird. So you're pretty safe.
Very a wimpy little flightless bird. That sounds a lot like East Lansing.
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, we have a lot of different colored squirrels, though, so they're a big threat.
Fat-ass squirrels, man. Like the squirrels down in here in Florida, they are fit, they are virile, they are quick. But when we were up in Ann Arbor over the summer, like my wife had to stop and take a picture of the fattest squirrel she'd ever seen. She was like, what the hell? These are mutant squirrels.
It's a college town squirrel, man. They have that unlimited meal plan. They get in those dorms and they just go to town. They eat.
It's like the freshman 45.
It really is, and the freshmen feed the squirrels too, so they're not afraid of people.
All right, so obviously we've got you on this week because we've got the Battle for Michigan coming up Saturday, 3:30 in East Lansing. It's expected to have some inclement weather. I expect the trash to be blowing hard. I expect just a whirlwind of disgusting human filth on the field. But do you think the weather's going to have any effect on the game? I mean, obviously, you guys are one team with a proclivity to turn the ball over, but, you know, with a quarterback starting his first few games, this has got to be Connor Cook's biggest test as a starting quarterback, and he could have to, you know, fight into a driving rain.
You know, when looking at this matchup in general, it pretty much comes down to which quarterback manages the game better and doesn't turn the ball over. I mean, Connor Cook's done a really good job of that so far. He's only thrown two picks. I think he has a fumble as well. But for the most part, he's pretty safe because both those interceptions were off tip passes as well, one from his own team. But yeah, he's kind of the X factor in this game.
Yeah, he has impressed me. He definitely impressed me against Illinois. I know that there was somewhat of a hangover after that Purdue game, and you guys got off to a bit of a sluggish start, but that 99-yard drive, the piss drinker's drive, was kind of, the turning point in that game. I mean, it was aided by that ridiculous catch by Fowler off the tip, but it's amazing to see how quickly momentum shifted in that game because Illinois was driving down the field. They got the ball down to the one-yard line. Defense comes up with a huge stop, and then they march down the field, and that was it.
That really did turn everything, and it was interesting because that came off too, where, I mean, MSU fumbled the ball in the end zone and hurt themselves, but then it kind of swung back their way. And that definitely made a difference. But the funny one was after the game, someone asked Connor Cook what was kind of, I think it was his favorite throw of the game or kind of the point where the tide shifted. And he talked about that throw and how much confidence he had in Benny Fowler to make a play. And I was just like, dude, you threw it at two different defenders.
Yeah, I mean, it happens.
That's the kind of play that last year goes against MSU and went the other way. So ball's bouncing their way a little more right now.
The ball is definitely bouncing their way. I would say the opposite for Michigan. There have been a few plays going back to the Indiana game, the Penn State game, where Michigan defenders have been in a position to make a play on the ball, and they either lose that battle or something crazy happens and it turns into a big game. I think the big one against Indiana, now the guy's receiver, the receiver's name slips me, but that little, the tiny guy who's incredibly fast.
Shane Wynn.
That catch that he had over, was it either Stribling or it was Taylor? I think it was Taylor. And then it was definitely Stribling against Penn State. We know where Penn State drove down and scored to tie it up to send that game to overtime. He had good position on the ball. It's just Allen Robinson out-jumped him.
Yeah, Allen Robinson would be nice to have in East Lansing or Ann Arbor on either side right now, that's for sure. He could do some things.
Yeah, he had a pretty quiet game until that last drive. On that last drive, he had that one, you know, that catch where he only had 1 foot in bounds, and they originally called it incomplete, and they overturned it. He had that ridiculous catch. But he had his low moments, you know, the fumble in overtime that should have won the game for Michigan, but ultimately didn't because Gibbons couldn't get the ball off the ground. But let's not talk about that. I don't really think that happened. I think that was just a terrible dream. So going into this game, you guys are 7-1. Your lone loss coming to Notre Dame with a bunch of questionable pass interference calls. You guys play amazing defense, the best defense in the country that I've seen up to this point. Now, I'm sure there are people down in the SEC where I live who would argue with that, mainly the Alabama folk. But Michigan State's defense is for real. They cause problems for everybody. They're wildly confident. They don't make a lot of mistakes. Everyone is where they're supposed to be. And if you're Michigan, how do you attack something like that?
You know, what's a lot of fun to watch about the MSU defense is Pat Narduzzi literally says, here's what I'm doing, try and beat it. It's no secret what he does. He challenges his linebackers. He matches his corners one-on-one on the outside, says you're going to have to throw to the sideline, and it's just the reality of the situation. They're going to stop the run, and you're going to have to go to the air.
Absolutely. And I think I read something interesting on the Only Colors today from Heck. Is his name Heck? Is that for real?
Yeah.
Is that like his real name?
I believe so.
That's his parents got some balls. So Heck wrote that another thing about Narduzzi's defense is his, you know, the amount of pressure he calls in those double A gap blitzes. He forces an offense to mold itself into what he wants them to do, rather than an offense setting the tone, because if that double blitz is working and you've got those two beasts in the middle, Allen and Bulla, who quarterback that defense, you've got, you know, you're going to force the team to go into a max protect mode. And then you're playing right into Michigan State's hands because they play that incredible press coverage. They've got two beasts on the outside. Dennard is just a monster. I mean, he's a matchup problem. I'm intrigued to see how he and Gallen go at it, but I don't think that's the matchup of the game. I do think it is whoever's matched up on Funchess, because he's, you know, tight end frame with wide receiver speed. What do you think about the matchup on the other side?
No, and that's the one I pointed to as well. I figure MSU is going to throw Dennard on Gallen and say, well, we're putting our best against your best, and we're going to try to take him out of the game. Not literally physically, but
right.
Shut him down,
we'll
for
see.
The record. No thuggery.
No thuggery.
But, yeah, Funchess is going to be the challenge, and you assume that, obviously, Trey Waynes, the other cornerback, is going to be on him, and this is going to be a big test for him. The other thing that Narduzzi does well is puts those safeties much closer to the line of scrimmage than most do. So you've got him close enough where he can make a play on the ball there as well if you're going to Funchess. And it is a lot of what you said. Narduzzi makes you do what he wants you to, which is short passes to the flat, and he knows the safeties can get up there and knock your legs out from under you. And that's what they're going to try to do against Michigan as well.
Yeah, what do you take of Fitzgerald Toussaint's comments, the little brother comments? Personally, when Mike Hart said that after the 2007 game. I've never been a fan. I've never called Michigan State little brother. I don't call Ohio State Ohio. I guess I'm old school in the sense that I have respect for our rivals. I want them to line up, and I'm not, you know, much for the trash talk. But the last person who should be talking trash on Michigan's team is the guy that averaged 1 yard a carry against Penn State. Would you agree?
That was my thought, too. I think I made a joke on Twitter, something about, well, it's a good thing Michigan State's run defense is so soft with the talk that he has. That was something else. You know, when Mike Hart made those comments, my thought at the time was, I mean, his career against Michigan State was over. It's a little bit spineless to make those comments when no ramifications for you whatsoever.
Right, but it is stuck with – it is almost ingrained into the rivalry now that someone has with a parting shot kind of set the tone for the next 4 years, because I agree with Mark D'Antonio. Pride does come before the fall. And I feel like, to a certain extent, that was the situation again last year when Michigan won that game. I felt like D'Antonio almost brought his guys into that game a little more arrogant and a little more, you know, not ready as they should have been, because I remember, you know, they made the joke about the threat and, you know, where's the threat, and the comments he made before the game, I think, were detrimental to Michigan State.
Yeah, to an extent. He has a tendency to say a little bit too much about the rivalry, but he's done a good job this season of staying away from that. He was very tongue in cheek at press conferences this week, and even making jokes about, someone asked about the skywriting of Go Blue. And he was like, what do you want me to say? Like, you guys know the drill. Not biting on those things, which is a different Mark D'Antonio than last year, obviously.
Right. I mean, they have to have confidence. I know that their motto going into the season was, the inches. The inches that they lost games by last year. You know, they came back. They were leading Michigan by one in that game. Didn't they lose most of their games by a total of, 15 points?
I think it was either 5 or 6 Big Ten losses by 13, I think, something right around there.
They only lost by 1 point to Ohio State. They lost by 2 points to Michigan. A lot of just heartbreaking, you know, not being able to finish losses. And their biggest problem was, from my perspective, dropped passes and inconsistent quarterback play. You're not seeing that this year. You're seeing, Connor Cook only had 2 incompletions against Illinois. Granted, it was, you know, a very porous Illinois defense, but I'm all about momentum. I feel, I feel like Michigan, to a degree, has some momentum going into that game as well, based on how well they performed offensively, albeit against a even more porous Indiana defense. But 65 points is 65 points. I don't care who you're playing.
Yeah, it's a lot of points for sure. But like you said, I think the nice thing for Michigan State is they did play last week, and they didn't have to come off a bye week after a crappy game against Purdue, which really fell on the shoulders of Connor Cook as well. Like you said, last year was a lot of bad quarterback play. The O-line was a big problem last year, too. There were a lot of injuries, but the wide receivers couldn't catch anything to save themselves, and this year they are. When you pointed that Purdue game, you say, oh, well, they made every play they could. You ran the ball. The O-line gave you time. Fell on Connor Cook. And that's, again, where it comes into this game and says, well, which Connor Cook are you going to see? Are you going to see the one at Iowa who played well, the one who played well against Indiana, the one who played well at Illinois, or are you going to see the one who just, who is this guy playing against Purdue?
Right. And I think that, you know, for your fan base has got to be the biggest question mark going into that game is, you know, which version of this quarterback is going to show up? Because it's head scratching, because Purdue at one point, the first game of the year, they give up 55 points, and then they give up 44 points. And I mean, their defense has progressively gotten better over the year, but the only offensive touchdown in that game was off of a trick play, wide receiver pass, and a defensive touchdown. Michigan State's relied heavily on turnovers, relied heavily on defensive scoring early in the year while they sorted out their quarterback problems. I know it's all coming together now. They've put, some good points on the board, but if you get into a situation where they're down early and they start forcing things, I've seen Bowman. I've seen Bowman not be able to dig himself out of holes when he gets put, when he gets pressure put on him, similar to our offensive coordinator. So, you know, for me, one of the keys to this game is who scores first. If, you know, even if it's 7 to 10 point lead, how does that change the game plan for whoever is ahead, and who's going to have the offensive prowess to make the adjustments? Now, you guys don't have as stiff of a test going against Michigan's defense as Michigan's offense does going against yours, but most of the time people are saying, well, whoever runs the ball the best is going to win that game. I don't really see that this time.
You know, I do, but I don't think it's as much of an even rushing battle. I mean, if you're looking at Michigan, is it still that stat of they have the most rushes for no gain and negative yardage in the country?
It's close to it, and a lot of that has to deal with the fact that we have a very stubborn offensive coordinator who, against inferior opponents, decided, well, this is what we're going to do. And against Akron, they tried to man-ball it, and they don't have man-ball personnel yet. And that's just the truth. Against UConn, they don't have man-ball personnel. They try to force it. They put their quarterback in bad situations, and when you put Devin Gardner in bad situations, sometimes bad things happen. He is the most Jekyll and Hyde. I mean, I never thought I would say that about another quarterback after we had Jannard Robinson and some of the turnovers he had. I think the term arm punt was coined by Jannard Robinson's quarterback play. But some of the turnovers that Devin Gardner's had, they've been maddening to watch as a Michigan fan. And I'm curious to see if this is going to be like that 2011 squad who tried to force man ball against Iowa and got beat and then went to more spread and had a great run at the end of the season, beating Nebraska, beating Ohio State, because they, you know, converted to those spread concepts. But so they tried to go play man ball at Iowa in 2011 and it got them beat. And after that game, they switched to more spread concepts, and they ended up beating Nebraska like a drum. They ended their losing streak against Ohio State, but I don't really think that applies against Michigan State because they ran mostly spread last year and it only netted them 12 points. So are they going to be able to cross that plane? Are they going to be able to score this time? Because every time Michigan got in the red zone last year and the year before, they tried to get too cute, and you've got a quarterback who's athletic, use his legs, make it 11 on 11 instead of 10 on 11 and see what happens.
You know, I think it's going to be an interesting matchup. I think given the bye week, Michigan's got to have some more creativity in there. Although I've said that to another Michigan fan and they straight up told me there's no way El Borges will do anything, which is eerie because that's exactly the statements MSU was making about Dan Rushhour last year. But, yeah, you know, you look at that, and I think Gardner's going to be able to do some things. He's a different kind of mobile quarterback than Jannard Robinson, who, well, he couldn't do a lot against Michigan State because they knew exactly what he was capable of. Whereas Gardner can throw it, whether he makes good decisions all the time with that or not, he can still throw the ball.
Right. And I think Devin definitely has the tools to make all the big-time throws. He's definitely got two weapons on the outside. Going into this year, the wide receiver position was the biggest question mark outside of Gallen. We really thought we would have Amara Darboe as that guy. I felt they would get more production out of Chesson. They have not. Dileo has not gotten much production either. So you're looking at, now that they've switched Funchess over to a full-time wide receiver, I expect, you know, obviously the game plan being with Narduzzi, that double A-gap blitz, trying to pressure those young guards and the center position up the middle. I think you're going to see Michigan go a lot of max protect, a lot of blockers in the backfield, and try to beat those one-on-one matchups on the outside.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by that. I think the one thing that Gardner's got to be able to do in this game is use Funchess as a safety net. Just if he's running around, look for that big target and just kind of throw it to an extent up in the air to him, because he can get up, go up and get it. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see them keep a lot more blockers in the backfield. That's going to be a key to that game because they're going to run that A-gap blitz. But what they do well is they don't show it. You don't know when that's coming. And that's a key to obviously blitzing in general. But they run that blitz a lot, but you still don't really know what's coming. And like you said, those guards, it's going to be interesting to see how they respond to that, because it's going to be a different defense a different way they do everything than they've seen so far.
Yeah, there are so many question marks going into this game for Michigan where I don't feel that's the same case for Michigan State. They do what they do. This is what you're going to get. And with Michigan, you don't know the identity of the defense, which defense is going to show up. Is it going to be that one that did a relatively good job shutting down Penn State for most of that game, forcing them out of their game? I mean, the final score is going to show that Penn State scored 40 points, but Michigan kept that offense in check, you know, a pocket passing team, a decent downhill running team with a good offensive line. They held most of what they wanted to do in check. The only time Penn State really got into scoring position was when Michigan turned it over on their 15-yard line and gave Hackenberg a short field. So which defense is going to show up? What has Madison been doing to prepare for that attack? Is he going to have anything exotic, or is he going to say, well, we're going to try this bend but don't break style again, and hopefully it doesn't bite us in the butt, because that kind of plays into Michigan State's strengths.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to watch, because you could almost classify the Michigan State offense as bend but don't break, just flipped. Because their goal is, you know, they're not going to be explosive necessarily. They'll take their chances selectively downfield, and they're just going to try to move the ball methodically. There's nothing really fancy about what they do. You know, they'll throw a trick play in there, as well. Everyone knows Mark D'Antonio is attuned to. But I don't think this game requires MSU to do it. You know, you really hit the nail on the head to me with the defense, which Michigan defense shows up, which, and to an extent, it's which Michigan offense shows up. But you look at Michigan State, and it's almost only which offense shows up. You're not so concerned with the defense. I think it's a test to going into Michigan, and a bigger one than they've faced, but you know what you're getting, and there's less question marks. And that's, to me, what gives Michigan State the advantage in this game.
Yeah, I think for me, when I look at this game, I see how well they played against Notre Dame. They put up 41 points. They moved the ball at will, and they limited their mistakes. Now, there was that one crazy interception for a touchdown, but that was the only turnover of the game for Michigan's offense. They did what they wanted when they wanted to do it. So early in the year, you know, we as fans felt like they could do no wrong, you know, like, well, if they've got their offense, they've got their system. And then the wheels came off. And I can't explain what it is, be it confidence, be it, you know, bad things snowballing, but they really haven't been able to maintain that identity. Now, if you were going into this year and Michigan was going to be playing Michigan State the week after that Notre Dame game, this would be a completely different conversation, because we would be thinking, well, this Michigan offense is a machine right now, and it's going to be an excellent matchup between Michigan State's defense and Michigan's offense. But now the kind of the taint of those bad games, even though Gardner's played considerably better over the last few weeks, it's still worrisome. Like, you look at that Minnesota game, and Minnesota's playing some damn good football right now, but Michigan holds them to 17 points and blows them out. That team just took it to Nebraska. But then they go on the road, and the identity changes. They don't have the same moxie that they do when they play at home, and that's concerning.
And that's something that people have brought up all week, is Brady Hoke's teams at Michigan have struggled on the road. I guess I didn't realize that fact, but there's apparently some validity to that. It's very much like you said. Again, you're hitting kind of all those points. And it's that Notre Dame game. I remember catching the second half of that after getting home from Spartan Stadium and just being like, oh my gosh. Like, if that's the Michigan team that's out there this year, don't even think about Michigan State competing with them. Wonder which bowl game Michigan's going to end up in, because they just looked like a dynamite team those first two games. But yeah, I think I'm not 100% sure on this, but I think one of the challenges is, it's a relatively young team. There's not a ton of experience, and that's concerning when the wheels start to come off. You don't have anyone to bring it back in.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm a huge Taylor Lewan fan, but I don't think he's a great leader. I think he puffs his chest out and he talks a big game, and he's a great talent, but when he speaks, I don't know. Yeah. After the Akron game, when they almost lost, he said, well, it was embarrassing. We're Michigan. We shouldn't play that way. and it didn't translate next week against UConn. So the message that the leaders on this team are supposed to be conveying and building these guys up, it's not working. And the, you know, this isn't a senior-laden team that has those dynamic leaders like a Mike Martin did in 2011, you know, the guy that would really get them straight. And, I, you know, Denard, for as much as he was the face of the program, he was very rah-rah, but he wasn't a great leader. And I think they're lacking that guy that, you know, naturally gravitates to that spotlight and takes command of that team. And I think all over Michigan State's defense, you guys have those guys. You've got legitimate pros who say, hey, this is the expectation.
And, you know, that was a huge – I mean, every offseason a huge topic is the leadership going into a season. But one that was addressed is the fact there's 18 seniors on this Michigan State team, and many of them have played a lot of football. So it almost became that there was a captain-worthy player in every position group. I mean, you look at Denard in the secondary, Bulla in the linebacker area. Tyler Hoover's been here since the turn of the century at defensive tackle. So you've got guys who have been here. And heck, Shalit Calhoun, I am convinced, might be the best leader on that team. If he's not a captain the next 2 years, 3 years, I'll be stunned.
If he's there.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy has done so much for his draft stock. He reminds me so much of Pierre Paul that used to play for South Florida. Just this guy that came out of nowhere and just made plays. And whenever you needed a big play, Calhoun is there. I mean, just look at that South Florida game, when the way that Michigan State played against South Florida. That dude was a monster.
Yeah, he's been something. But the thing I like most about Calhoun is he's just a fun person. He gets requested for interviews after almost every game because he's such a, just an energetic, happy, laughing, just a good guy to be around, which is the other reason you think he's going to be a leader. He's a different leader than a Max Bulla, who, you know, pointing to struggles as well. Michigan State last year, everyone knows the struggles they went through. The fact that that team never became defense versus offense and maintained that through this offseason and through the first two crappy games here says everything. That's all about that team chemistry. You know, I've heard the stories about Max Bulla at halftime of the Minnesota game last year, which they needed to win to get bowl eligible. And again, in the bowl game, just the way that he lit into everyone and the fact of how that turned things. So you need a guy like that. You need a guy who's going to just rip into people and turn things around. And maybe Michigan doesn't have that. I don't know. I honestly don't pay close enough attention to those dynamics on their team to know.
I think that the guy on their team that has that appeal, that has that, you know, that glow, the guy that will get everybody in line, he was sitting on the sidelines with a torn ACL for a good portion of the first half of the season, and Jake Rudd. And now, you know, they've got Ryan back, but he hasn't made one of those game-breaking plays yet like he did last year. And they're easing him back in. I expect to see Jake Ryan a lot more in this game, and they're going to need him because I think the only way that Michigan comes out is on top in this game is if they force turnovers and get a short field or a shorter than normal field. And they're going to have to force Michigan State into doing something that they don't normally do, which is turn the ball over. And if they don't have Jake Ryan putting pressure on the quarterback and making Connor Cook make a decision that he's not used to making, then it could be very methodical, very similar to 2011.
And that's where you have concerns. And I put together today my kind of breakdown of the matchups of the Michigan defense against the Michigan State offense. And one of the key ones is Jake Ryan against the MSU fullback, Trevin Pendleton. He's got to be blocking him consistently. If he's not, Cook's getting pressure on him. And reality is MSU fans haven't seen him struggle with turnovers, so they don't know how he's going to respond to that. That's going to be, if he starts turning it over, that's going to be an issue. And how does he handle it in a rivalry game nonetheless?
Does he have a short leash if they get behind? I know that in the Notre Dame game, at the end of that game, they pulled him for Maxwell because they needed someone to run that two-minute drill. But, I mean, I realize he has done nothing to cause doubt, but he also has never been put in the situation. And say what you want, I know that Michigan State's defense is what it is. Michigan, you know, we talked about the matchups, but this is a rivalry game. And things can go either way. You know, you throw out the score, you throw out the record, and honestly, anything can happen. I did not think that Michigan was going to win that game last year, but they made enough plays to win. And this year I haven't seen a single person pick Michigan to win that game, and I'm interested to see how they play with that underdog chip on their shoulder, one that, quite frankly, against Michigan State, they really haven't had historically.
You know, and addressing the first thing, the leash on Connor Cook, I don't think there is one. It would take a serious implosion for them to switch anything up there. You know, the Maxwell at the end of Notre Dame thing, they said it wasn't because Cook was injured, but he came off the field shaking his arm a couple drives before that, came out the next one and threw three straight incompletions badly. So, I don't know what to believe there. But you could tell that it hurt Cook, and he responded big time after that. And as for the rest of that, I don't know, I think Michigan State's viewing themselves as underdogs here too. They talked about that the other day. Denard specifically saying, you know, we think we're underdogs in this one. I don't think they really care what Vegas has to say, for example, but they like that. They feel like they've been slighted in the past couple of years, and I don't know. I don't think they have been, but fair enough. Whatever you need to do to go into a game with intensity, that's what you got
to
do.
Well, I mean, sometimes you have to create your own motivation, and I guarantee the coaches are saying, we don't want these guys to feel like they should win this game because they're favored. You know, you have to create that. You have to, you know, you've got to find ways to motivate your team. I mean, obviously, you know, Michigan State doesn't need any motivation for this game. It's circled on the calendar. They've got the clock. But, you know, from the other perspective, one thing we haven't really talked about is the blossoming of Langford in the running game. He's come on quite a bit. He had a hell of a game against Indiana and hasn't really slowed down that much. And he can be that change of pace guy, the one that moves the sticks and just keeps those drives alive.
You know, he's been important. I think he's averaging 115 in his past three games, all of which were over 100 yards. And he's doing that while splitting time, too. They don't run one running back. They've thrown in a true freshman in Dalton Williams, who's a nice change of pace with a bigger body. He's about 6'2", 220. So he's Le'Veon Bell size almost. Runs a little bit differently, but big guy. But Langford's been huge. I mean, I had a guy in the MSU press box say to me two weeks ago, that he's like, man, Langford's just, you know, he's not that great. He can't break tackles. He's just doesn't have that great of vision. Breaks off a touchdown run. And I think Langford's a solid back. Don't think he's spectacular, but he's exactly the type of guy that MSU is using well behind a really solid O-line.
Yeah, the offensive line has definitely been the difference. It's been night and day. Let's talk a little bit about the ramifications of this game. Michigan already has a loss in the big. Michigan State does not. Their lone loss coming to Notre Dame. So whoever wins this game most likely has the inside track to win the Legends. I mean, the road ahead for Michigan is much more difficult than Michigan State's. Northwestern's playing like crap. Nebraska just got beat by Minnesota. And, you know, you got that final game of the year against Minnesota, whereas Michigan, you know, they still have to play Nebraska. They still have to play Northwestern as well. Two games that may not be as difficult in the past, but then they've got that big dog looming at the end of the year that even if Michigan wins this game, if they lose to Ohio State, it could have essentially put Michigan State into the championship.
Yeah, absolutely. This game hinges on a lot more than just a rivalry, and that's the huge pride element of it. There's a lot more at stake here. It's like you said, pretty much who wins this game is likely going to Indianapolis minus someone else really dropping the ball. I mean, Iowa and Minnesota are kind of there, but I'm not considering them too much of a threat. And it's been a round robin now. Nebraska's coming up for Michigan State, and Michigan still has them as well. So it's going to be interesting how that shakes out. But this one sets the tone for the rest of the season for both teams. I mean, it's win, or you're probably not going to Indy. So I think both teams are pretty well aware of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, I want to see Michigan in that game. I'd like to go to Indianapolis. But I think it would be very intriguing to see this Michigan State defense against that Ohio State offense. I would be very I wouldn't be disappointed with that matchup. That's going to make a lot of Michigan fans mad to, you know, to see your two main, you know, Big Ten rivals playing against each other in that championship game. But ultimately, it comes down to good football. I think that would be a damn good football game.
You know, I've been torn in that. I almost, assuming Michigan State gets there, would rather see them play Wisconsin to see Melvin Gordon against this run defense. I mean, guy averages 10 yards a carry, pin him up against a team that allows 50 a game. I don't know, I think that'd be a lot of fun too. But yeah, Ohio State and Michigan State would be fun too. But hey, you got to win this one to start getting there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, man. Well, I'm going to wrap this up, and I really appreciate your time. It's been a great conversation. I got to ask you, we ask this to every guest, who on Michigan State, either side of the ball, offense or defense, do you have a boner for this week? Meaning, who's going to be that guy that really puts it over the top?
Oh, man, that's a tough question. My gut says Jim Bowman just because it's so creepy and weird.
Ugh.
But no, he looks too much like a walrus. On the field. Yeah, I'm going to go with my guy, McGarrett Kings, wide receiver. He's just got the swagger. He's got the swagger going for him, and he's been quiet the past 2 weeks after having a couple breakout games. So I think it's about time he makes some noise.
I hear you. I like that. My boner for this week is Devin Funchess. I think it's the matchup of the game. I think Jeremy Gallen will get his, but ultimately he's going to have a wet blanket on top of him the entire game. And can he get open? Can Funchess break free? And can Gardner find it? But if he can, okay, I'll say this. If Funchess has a similar game that Drew Dileo had last year in terms of catches, then I think Michigan wins that game.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable one. I would point it to Gardner on the ground. I think that's where it's decided for Michigan offensively. But Funchess is going to make a difference in that too, for sure, because he's going to have the inexperienced corner on him for most of the game.
All right, score prediction. What do you got?
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about that as I drove back from Illinois last weekend. 26-19 is what I came up with then, and that's what I've gone with all week.
26-19, Michigan State?
With Michigan State winning, yeah. I think it's a game where, you know, and this is such a cliche, you play 10 times, it's probably 5-5. But when I look at the teams, I think Michigan State brings more just solidness to the table than Michigan does right now.
I'm going to say 20-13 Michigan. I think Michigan's defense steps up this game. I think that having 2 weeks to prepare for that game, they'll have an answer for Connor Cook. They held Michigan State relatively scoreless last year. Michigan State needed a fake punt late in the game to really get that, you know, to make it a game. So I think it's going to be either 17-13 or 20-13 Michigan.
Fair enough.
All right, man. Thank you so much, dude. I really appreciate you coming on here. To the audience, I'm sorry if I sound like a total creep ass, half whispering on this recording. My wife and my kids are asleep, and they're, you know, them sleeping and not being angry at dad is more important than me talking like an asshole. So, Mike, thank you again for coming on. Happy Halloween, and good luck this weekend.
Absolutely. Same to you. Also, don't believe him. He does sound this creepy all the time.
I do. I really do. All right, man. Thank you.
Absolutely.